Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues. And, of course, we welcome your calls out across America of 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we have with us on the line from World Affairs Brief, Mr. Joel Skousen, and hopefully he'll be with us in just a moment. And of course, really one of my favorite guests as we begin trying to explore what's going on in the world today. And you must understand that because of the degree of control over the mass media, you're not getting the truth. Our boys are dying every day in Afghanistan and of course, Iraq, we have no idea how many casualties there are, because, of course, they don't want to talk about the casualties. Oh, it's all right to talk about Jessica Lynch. And if there was ever a stage-managed situation, that is the tragic situation there, you know, and she's the heroine, fighting to the last bullet. I'm not even sure she ever fired a shot, but it makes a great story, and then rescued by the brave special forces. Actually, of course, all the Iraqi guards had left by the time they got there, but that really doesn't matter, because reality is usually scoffed at, and illusion is usually king. But tragically, in the battle for the survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion or propaganda that's going to determine what the future will bring. Well, with us is Joel Skousen. Hi, Joel. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Stan.
Well, tell us a little bit about your take on what's going on. Of course, I always look forward to getting your weekly updates, but I'm not sure which one we're going to be doing tonight.
Well, I am very, very concerned about recent remarks by Paul Brenner in Iraq, comparing his work there to U.S. control over Japan and Korea after the war. He's talking about remaking the entire infrastructure. This is something that I had reported on previously in the briefs. For example, we found out that they had sent around a whole bunch of people to reform the education system. It sent out a whole bunch of experts of a certain variety to reform the judicial system. He admitted on this particular interview, we're going to rewrite their constitution, we'll rewrite their laws, we're going to turn this into an occupation like Japan and MacArthur.
And, of course, you know, somebody was saying the other day that one of the women there was talking at a meeting, and one of the American generals were there, and she was saying, look, I mean, how is anything different here than it was when Saddam was here? I mean, Saddam was killing our people. You're killing our people. What's the difference between when Saddam was here and you're here? And the American general said, why today on every rooftop in Baghdad and other major cities, there's a television desk. And what they're really going to do is use television to program ideas into the minds of the Iraqi people. It sounds like just a great social experiment by those people who think that they could play God and remake the world.
One of the things that Americans labor under in terms of an illusion is that the American experts that they've got in there are busy setting up a country similar to the United States, and this isn't true at all. In fact, one of the most surprising things to find is that the project for Project Democracy, which is funded by Congress and your taxpayer dollars, does nothing but promote outright socialism in other countries. That program actually fights against any libertarian or free market type parties that are trying to establish an American constitutional type of republic. And it's the same thing in Iraq. If there were any people really trying to devise a libertarian system, they would not be allowed by the American by the American overseers.
Well, I think it's important when you have to understand what they mean when they say democracy. When they mean say democracy, they mean we're going to appoint the people in charge, and they're going to do what we want them to do, and that's how democracy really works. That's why our founding fathers said we don't want a democracy. We want a republic with limitations placed on the power of government. It sounds like what we're going to do is have a government that has no limitations on their power.
Well, you know, they... You know, raw democracy, of course, is 100% pure majority rule, and raw democracy always descends into a battle of greed, of one majority trying to take the productive class for everything it's worth. It's like the old adage of two wolves and a sheep voting on dinner, and the sheep, obviously, is at a disadvantage. But you see, the United States can't even afford to have raw democracy there. They have to have controlled democracy. They have to control who the majority is, because obviously the majority of Iraqis, even though they may be beneficial to be or grateful to have Saddam Hussein removed, certainly don't want to be under the control of the Americans, and they would vote immediately to have the Americans removed from the country if they gave them raw democracy. And so they're manipulating, of course, the political process at every stage through the Iraqi Governing Council, which is not only not governing, but simply is a propaganda arm of the United States.
Chris, it's all hand-picked people who do not represent the people of Iraq at all. And you know, the great tragedy is what happened this last weekend when this Islamic cleric, the Shia cleric, had come in from Iran. And he, you know, had certainly the stature. He might very well have been the person that, you know, might have been selected by a majority of the people to lead the country if he could have worked with the Sunni Muslims and the Kurds. I mean, he had a great deal of stature, and, you know, instead of protecting him, we leave him open, and they're able to put in a car bomb. And how did all these terrorists get into the country that is under military occupation, and how did they get all the explosives, and how were they able to blow up the building and kill 56 people? Sounds like maybe we didn't give him very good protection, any better protection than we've given so many of the other Shia clerics who might very well have had the potential to lead the country.
One of the disturbing pieces of information that's come out lately through John Lofton is that the UN bomb was composed not only of hodgepodge of old weapons that were stuffed into the cement truck, but it was all packed in around C4 explosive. Now, C4 is a U.S.-made explosive. It was not Semtex, you know, which is the East German or Czechoslovakian leftover from Russia, which is what you would expect this to be. And so how they got a hold of, you know, many, many hundreds of pounds of C4 explosive is another question that remains to be answered.
All right. Well, certainly, you know, I wonder at what point the American people are going to get over the euphoria and begin to realize American boys are dying almost every day, either in Afghanistan or they're dying in Iraq. And my concern is we were told we had to go into Afghanistan because of Osama bin Laden, and yet the Afghans offered to turn Osama bin Laden over to a third country and offered to expel him from the country, and that would not, no, we were going to go to war. It didn't matter what they did, what concessions they were going to make, we were going to go to war. And then we had to go to war with Iraq because of the weapons of mass destruction. That was the only responsible thing to do, because Saddam Hussein could, of course, give those weapons to Osama bin Laden, or to other terrorists at any time, you know, and we had to protect America. It would be irresponsible not to attack him when he had weapons of mass destruction. And yet, I've talked to refugees from Cuba who tell me that Fidel Castro has biological and chemical weapons, and it'd be a lot easier to go after him. He's only 90 miles off the Florida Keys.
He's had those weapons for years, of course, with the Russians, and now with advisors from the China. He, of course, has those weapons again. I don't think they ever have dismantled any of the facilities that were there. Certainly Cienfuegos is still in operation as the major spy base, although it's operated by the Chinese now instead of the Russians. The Chinese have become the open surrogates of the Russians so that Russia can continue to play this ruse of weakness so that the American people will not realize that it is the primary future threat hiding in the background.
Well, of course, what is your take on what's going to happen over there? It seems to me, like, from what I hear, you know, on one side I'm told the Iraqis are just so grateful to us. Oh, yeah, there are a few people up in the Sunni regions who don't like the Americans there, but most of them are just so grateful that we're there and got rid of Saddam Hussein. And I'm sure that they're glad to get rid of Saddam Hussein, but are they really pleased to have another occupying power as they've had throughout the years?
There are, in fact, I would estimate a full third of the Iraqis are pleased to have the Americans there. And that's because a full third really do long for a non-religious controlled government. They just want a secular government. They want to be like the rest of the world, and the U.S. is the model of that. So I think there is a large constituency of people who are legitimately anti. They don't want the Shiites to rule. They know that it'll be a Taliban-type restrictive religious government. It was much like Iran under the Shah, where they had a great deal of secularization in Iran. And it was very popular, frankly, among the majority of your worldly class people there. And Iraq longs, a good portion of the people long for that same thing. But I don't think that there will ever be peace there. In fact, what I predict is that because of the extreme hostility that is being built within soldiers and resentment against the Rumsfeld regime in the Pentagon. Rumsfeld is the most unpopular Secretary of Defense ever among military rank and file. And that's because of multiple broken promises. They simply, I mean, this, you have to be in the military to know how cynical military people can get after they, you know, get promises broken to them numerous times. And they have broken every promise in the book. They've virtually stopped any elimination or any ability of people to get out of the military unless you're the top man, Tommy Franks, they let out. And he got out, I think, because he didn't want to be saddled with what was coming down the pike. But I suspect that they're going to push for a draft. I don't think they're going to get anybody to join the Army under these conditions now. I think recruitment, from what I've heard from the grapevine, is down at least 50%. And they're only garnering any new recruits from people who are absolutely poverty-stricken, or either that or the, you know, macho types that want to go into elite special forces. But in fact, you know, in the military, what used to be the safe second echelon or rear echelon type jobs, the truck drivers and the supply people are the ones that are really getting shot at. It's not the well-armed special forces people that are getting, you know, killed. It's the people who are simply driving trucks around that are getting, you know, knocked off with RPGs and other weapons of choice.
But won't there be a terrible, you know, a resistance to the idea of having, you know, the draft? Or are they going to have maybe another staged attack here in America to, of course, certainly raise support for the war party?
Well, I have long predicted that they've got to have another terrorist attack. They can't keep crying wolf like they are and maintain any credibility. They certainly have lost a tremendous amount of the momentum that they had even 6 months ago. Bush's popularity is down. I don't think it's anywhere near threatening to get him unelected. The Democrats have put together unwisely a list of candidates that's so long that nobody can remember hardly any of them. It's almost a non-issue in the press. When Howard Dean, a nice leftist from Vermont who played conservative while I was there to his constituency and turned quite a bit to the left, you know, they can talk about him coming together in the polls and doing well in a primary, and now they, you know, they have several other people they keep trying to talk up, but the field is so full. If the party, which is very controlled, like the Republican Party, if they're really serious about winning this election, they would keep that field down to three or four, and so that it would look like a horse race, but they would really push one or two. So I think the Democrats know that this is not their turn to take over this year.
All right. Well, it's really such a tragic situation, really tragic, because American boys are dying in a war that we were told we had to fight because of Saddam had those weapons of mass destruction. He was going to use at it. At any moment, it would be irresponsible not to attack. And then, of course, we can't find the weapons of mass destruction because, as you said, they were certainly whisked off into Syria. Maybe we'll find them over there and we can justify that to go to war with Syria or maybe with Iran in the near future.
they could very well pull any of those. They know where the weapons of mass destruction went. You know, they've leaked the story now about two or three semi-truck loads of mysterious weapons showing up at the Hezbollah. Well, we're talking about, you know, 200 or 300 truckloads of weapons of mass destruction that went to Syria. So three or four going over to Hezbollah, which is probably nothing more than another supply of rockets, is certainly not, a real smoking gun compared to Syria. I think one of the biggest time bombs for the administration, of course, is the cost of this Iraq thing. They've been hiding the cost through a lot of smoke and mirrors and black budget work. But we're looking, easily about $1 billion a week now, and that could easily escalate to two. What's interesting is that you have the normal rank-and-file bureaucrat who's working either privately or for the Pentagon directly in Paul Brenner's team that really have been converted to the fact that we're going to make this a success story, and they are bound and determined to make it a success story like Japan.
Like we did in Vietnam, too. In fact, that's really what we were telling the people. We're gonna make Vietnam so good that other people there will love us, and of course nobody will then want the Viet Cong, and then everything is just gonna be fine, and all of the sacrifices we're making will be well worthwhile because we'll bring democracy to Vietnam.
Of course, you know, you and I both know that they purposely wanted to sabotage the war in Vietnam, and they did that for different reasons than when they went into war in Iraq.
Right,
they
you're really right.
Did want to go into war in Iraq, and there wasn't any tentativeness to that. They went in, in a rush to war, and they didn't even care to prepare about or to delay enough to prepare for the peace to try to rebuild essential infrastructure. Now we know, of course, that many billions are going not for essential infrastructure. In fact, they're being sacrificed in essentials in order to do all of the social reorganization that they're doing there.
And don't forget about Halliburton. They're getting a very large contracts, and Bechtel and some of the other major corporations.
And all of these are without bids.
Without bids. I think that's just so interesting that they would pick a Dick Cheney's corporation that is still paying him a deferred salary of a couple of, at least $100,000 or more a year, Halliburton, and give them a couple of $1 billion non-competitive contract for services not defined. I mean, this doesn't make sense.
It's even worse because in that non-defined is the key to why this is insider dealing. There's no way that you could even estimate what the loss in oil equipment was that Halliburton or Brown and Root was to prepare repair before the war had even started. But they let a $150 million contract to Brown and Root for something that hadn't even happened yet. Now, how do you do that?
Well, I suppose when you can keep the public's attention focused on Martha Stewart, why, it's like the old sleight of hand. You use one hand and you draw their attention there, while, of course, stealing with the other hand.
A very apt analogy there, Stephen. So I think the cost thing is something that the United States could really sink support for anything in this. Of course, there's two things that mitigate that. One is that the U.S. taxpayer is not being taxed directly. If they were taxed directly, and this was going to be a bill that they would get instead of the $400 tax rebate, they'd be screaming like murder. But because Americans are never forced to pay any of this stuff directly, they only do it through indebtedness, which postpones it to the inevitable day of reckoning, and the American people can shrug their shoulders and not feel the direct pain. That's one of the insidious things about increased ability to go into debt for such things.
I read the most amazing statistics the other day, and they were talking about, of course, the deficit this year, the federal deficit, they were talking about 410, but they were talking really about $450 billion for this year and 450 or 60 for next year. And then, of course, they ignore totally, they've stolen all the money from Social Security, but they said, look, you don't have to worry about this because a $450 billion debt is only 4% of GDP, and we had a 6% deficit under Ronald Reagan in the mid-1980s, and we handled that all right. Well, there's no reason why we can't handle a 4% of the GDP right at the present time. And we're going to talk about that as soon as we get back here with our special guest, Mr. Joel Skousen. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and I was just sort of quoting something I read the other day, and of course they're comparing our federal debt, now this is not the trade deficit, this is the increase in the federal debt, to the GDP, and saying, well, it's only 4% of GDP, and under Ronald Reagan it was 6%, but they never defined what the GDP, the gross domestic product, is. At one time it was primarily industrial, and increasingly our gross domestic product is services, where we look after one another. Have you thought and considered how they sort of use these figures, and they sort of look at you as if you must be some sort of a nut house who really believes in black helicopters, if you're really concerned about this debt, because certainly the experts aren't, because it's only 4% of GDP.
Well, that is a little bit of a misnomer, because first of all, a great deal of the U.S. obligations are off the books or hidden in other accounts. For example, if you really counted all of the indebted obligations of the in terms of loan guarantees, for example, every year they do every 2 or 3 years they do $10 billion in loan guarantees to Israel in a major worldwide deception or recession. All of the loan guarantees through the World Bank and all of those, if they defaulted, would come back on the U.S. taxpayer, and it would be devastating. Actual indebtedness of the United States is probably at least 15% of GDP. And so there is a great deal of smoke and mirrors involved in the accounting. You know, you talk about the various big five accounting firms and how they cook the books for huge fees and profits for other corporations. There's nothing like the federal government itself that cooks its books to keep the pain of federal deficit spending away from the American people. One of the issues that I brought up in this week's World Affairs Brief was the issue of the second bubble that occurred. They weren't content with trying to simply engineer a soft landing, which what you would do correctly is to slowly cut back on the money supply, not sufficiently to cause a depression, but enough to cause people to have to, stop the promiscuous use of money simply to buy into the ever-inflating stock and bond market. It forced people to cut back, live within their means. Over time, if businesses and individuals do that, you can recover and people can have a basis of savings and support. But instead of that, what they've done is simply continue at a higher rate of inflating money and credit. And much of this has been actual monetary inflation. The figures from M1, 2, and 3 range anywhere from 8 to 14%. So the Fed has really been inflating the amount of dollars out there, and they've also been allowing credit to be very ample in terms of home mortgages. It's really the defense sector industry and the housing mortgage market that continues to drive, I really can't call it a recovery because it isn't a true recovery. Most everyone else is still in recession. It's only two or three favored government sectors that are experiencing fairly substantial growth. 30% of the American economy is associated with housing and building, and that's being driven by abnormally low loan rates. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two semi-private government loan agencies, are simply flooding the market with money, and almost anybody can get a loan out there now.
Well, of course, the thing that worries me is, will there be a real estate bubble? Certainly, ordinarily, you have a stock market bubble, and then sometime after that, you'll have a real estate bubble. But it's a real estate bubble that is really... Well, Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and of course, from editor of World Affairs Brief. We're talking about what's happening to the economy, and of course, that we're facing the possibility of a real estate bubble. In other words, right now the stock market is pretty well blown out, and then of course we see the market going up again, but really not based upon any value, because the price earnings ratio is still out of kilter. Production is really not up. Certainly, what we're seeing is a jobless recovery, which is really no recovery at all. It simply shows that people are putting money into the market and creating a false value within the stock market without any real value behind it. But now, of course, the housing market, as you point out, is still booming. But is there a possibility that one day that might break as well?
Well, normally, and I had predicted that the real estate bubble would have broken by now, and it did not. And part of the reason is because in the stock market, a lot of people were believing in the hype of the government that this was going to level out anytime soon. There was a recovery. They've been predicting a recovery now for 2 years, and it really hasn't happened. But what has happened is that it kept people from selling their stocks. In other words, they're still in denial that they had lost their value in their stocks, and most people have not sold their stocks. They simply have lost value and waited for it to recover. What they've done with their creation, or inflating the money and credit supply, they've created a second stock market bubble rather than a soft landing. In other words, you have extremely high valuations, but it's different than the earlier bubble in the 1990s, where you had a broad across the market bubble where everything was rising, everyone was a genius in the stock market, no one was losing. Whereas now, only the index stocks and certain defense stocks and things related to government in infusions of money are flying high, and their valuations are extremely high. About two-thirds of stocks haven't moved since their recession lows after the 2000-2001 crash of the market. And so this is a very insidious appearance of a rally when it really isn't. I think it's much manipulated, and you have most of your people who are recipients of the infusions of government cash are getting the signals of where to put their cash, and that's in these blue chips, overpriced stocks, and some of the technology stocks. But I still think we were facing a secondary bubble. I think that secondary bubble will make the inevitable collapse even much worse. But it has postponed the real estate downturn that should have normally fallen by now in the wake of the stock market downturn of 2000 and 2001.
Now, don't you think that a lot of this, of course, a secondary bubble is because of defense spending and because, of course, you know, of the military. We've actually taken a lot of people who'd ordinarily be working. We've, of course, sent them overseas. These are the reservists, the National Guard. So then other people have been able to take their jobs that, you know, and of course these poor guys in the reserve and National Guard are, you know, just eking out a living after they were making good salary before. So haven't we sort of artificially then, of course, kept unemployment from rising?
It's true, although I think the government is fudging the numbers significantly on unemployment. Of course, you know, are quoting figures around 6% for unemployment, but true unemployment, when you count the people who have stopped claiming benefits but are still looking for work, or the people who've taken jobs that are extremely underemployed, we're looking at unemployment still over 10%.
All right, fine.
Which isn't catastrophic. You know, in the Depression we had unemployment upwards of 30%. So there's still some room here. But Silicon Valley, for example, contacts that I have there say unemployment realistically is well over 20% in Silicon Valley.
Well, my understanding is that so many of the high-tech jobs, the computer jobs, the programming jobs are really going over to India and Bangladesh and other places where they can hire people for a third or a quarter of what they pay here. And then they're bringing in all these people from other countries on these special visas saying, oh, we can't hire anybody here. And of course, nobody bothers to check that there are lots of people that they could hire. And they're bringing these people, what do they call them, H-1 visas or something like that, and that, you know, several hundred thousand of these are out there. Have you heard about
these
that?
Yes, and these are people in Silicon Valley who are not losing their jobs. They have the preferred jobs because they're here on a cheaper salary base, and so they tend to not get laid off as opposed to the American higher-priced employees which are laid off. And so I am concerned about this because I think this is going to have long-term repercussions in terms of resentment of minorities and other foreigners in the country. I think they're setting us up for some real racial and cultural conflict.
Well, of course, this is why they don't want English as the only language, why they're not encouraging immigrants to learn the English language. That way they can play one group against the other. They're really masters of deceit and deception. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and he's the editor of World Affairs Brief. Joel, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get your publication and why they should get it? I can tell them that it's certainly, I think, the best thing that I get in the mail once a week. It comes by email. Always look forward to it. Always has some very, very astute observations. And, you know, I sit back and I think, gee, why didn't I think of that? Well, go ahead. How can people get in touch with you or get sample copies?
Well, thanks for the kind words, Stan. The World Affairs Brief is a weekly internet news analysis service that I put out. I cover the three or four major issues that come up each week in the world. I do concentrate on the, I'm trying to explain what I think the powers that be who operate under the cloak of democracy in this nation are really up to in a war in Iraq and elsewhere as they maneuver. So that's my general perspective, and you can see sample editions on the web at my website, joelskousen.com. That's spelled J-O-E-L. S-K-O-U-S-E-N, joelskousen.com. And also under the World Affairs Brief section, you can find the archives of past World Affairs Brief clear back to 1998, and it's kind of a mini history of the world to see how they handled and maneuvered the New World Order in Bosnia and then ongoing relationships with Russia and China. I also have a section on some of my books. One of the past callers that asked about my maps on strategic relocation. I do have a book called Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, and in it I do have maps where I rate various, what I consider the high security areas in every region of the United States and places in North America and some in Mexico. But that, if that's of interest, that's also available at the website.
And would people order the book, or can they get the map separately, or how would they get that?
No, it's integral to the book because the map is cut up into sections, so there isn't any overall map. And the explanations are extremely important as well because there is no such thing as an absolute safe place. A lot of it depends on answering the correct criteria as to whether or not you can go to a rural area, for example, without cutting your financial lifeline. A lot of people make that mistake of trying to get to absolute safety, and then they can't afford to live there because they run, there's no work. Safety is almost inversely proportional to the population density. And so people whose work requires being where the people are have to have a particular strategy where they have compromises, and they pick some of the more safer places in the suburban or near suburban areas rather than absolute safety in a higher retreat zone area. So I cover those kinds of strategies in that very unique book.
And the name of the book again?
Strategic Relocation.
And, of course, that would be available at joelskousen.com?
Yes, and also through my publisher, which is Swift Publishing, and their 800 number is 1-800-644-1057.
644-1057. Okay, fine. All right, fine. Well, if you have a question or comment for Joel, our telephone number, as I mentioned earlier, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, you know, people listen and they say, well, these fellows are just so skeptical. You know, they ought to have more confidence in our leadership. And the tragedy is the leadership hasn't changed in America since the early 1930s. In fact, what you have to understand is that there's a small group that controls both political parties. I was just reading what Barry Goldwater had written in 1979 about how the Council on Foreign Relations controlled both political parties. And, you know, when Nixon was in the White House, why you've had Henry Kissinger controlling foreign policy. I guess Henry Kissinger came from the CFR, and then, of course, when Jimmy Carter took over the White House, why the Zygmunt Brzezinski, who also worked for Nelson Rockefeller, worked for the Rockefeller family, as did Henry Kissinger, why Zygmunt Brzezinski controlled our foreign policy. And then I was sort of looking to where we are today, and, of course, who was it who advised George W. Bush when he was running for the presidency? Why, Henry Kissinger. And who did George Bush call upon to head the special investigation of 9-1-1? Why, Henry Kissinger. And so we see the same people doing the same thing in the year 2003 that they were doing back in the early 1970s. But the American people aren't supposed to realize that. They're supposed to think we have a two-party system, and we vote for the candidate of our choice every 4 years. And the truth of the matter is, we vote for the candidate of their choice every 4 years because they have a different agenda. They have a different vision. Of course, they believe in a world government under a ruling elite, and of course, that's all covered in my book, of course, Brotherhood of Darkness. And certainly I know that Joel acknowledges that there really is sort of an invisible government out there, isn't there?
Absolutely. And it's no more evident than when you look at cover-up in, whether it's the 9/11 or the TW-800, all of those. When you see collusion among different aspects of government, which could never occur unless they were telephoning each other and colluding and agreeing beforehand that they will cover certain things, and all of that, of course, is highly illegal. That's one of the important things for any one of your listeners who are skeptical that there is a conspiracy to undermine our liberties and the Constitution, is to look at the cover-ups that have occurred, the major ones. Of course, 9/11 has a great many things that are emerging, but some of them have been so blatant, so obvious, like the JFK assassination spawned a whole generation or two or three generations of conspiracy theorists, because they made so many mistakes and watched maneuver and cover up for the government involvement in that. It was very interesting. And of course, TW-800 was one of the most dramatic, because here you had upwards of 150 witnesses to missiles going off, two or three different types of missiles. And the government comes out and not only whitewashes that, suppresses that testimony, but invents an entire video-framed propaganda piece about a fuel tank explosion. This was just a masterful piece of blatant cover-up, and people can learn and be convinced more clearly through these specific types of examples than they can by generalizations about the Illuminati or the Council on Foreign Relations, even though these are very real powerful groups which do control a good portion of the country.
Well, it was really so interesting. I've been reading this 950-page report that was put out by the Joint Intelligence Committee, and they keep talking about a man named Sheikh Mohammed, and he was, of course, the mastermind of the 9/11 attack. But, of course, he had also been involved over in the Philippines with Operation Pachinko over there, and he had been in the Philippines working with his nephew, a man named Ramzi Yosef, who, of course, was the mastermind of the first attack on the World Trade Center. And so they had actually indicted and convicted Sheikh Mohammed in absentia. And then they never tried to arrest him. They let him continue operating throughout the world. But what was so interesting in that, if you study the Oklahoma City bombing, you find that Terry Nichols was over there in the Philippines. And who was he meeting with? Why, he was meeting with Ramzi Yosef and the others, and a fellow named Murad. And they were teaching him how to build bombs. And then, of course, as soon as Ramzi Yosef and Murad, at least Murad, is arrested, why, Terry Nichols immediately leaves the Philippines and comes back to the United States, and then a few months later we have the Oklahoma City bombing. So the tie-in between Terry Nichols and Murad and Ramzi Yosef and Sheikh Mohammed is so strong, and yet, and they even talk about it, this in the report, but they never make any references to the Oklahoma City bombing, simply that the Sheikh Mohammed was over there, and of course we knew he was tied up with Bajinki, was convicted and tried. And then we never tried to arrest him. All we wanted to know is where he was. And you're wondering, what sort of madness is this? Here's a man, he's been incriminated in the first World Trade Center bombing. And we know he's that, and we know where he is, and we're not trying to arrest him. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, of course, you bring up some very crucial points there, Stan. The answer to that, of course, is that I think the people at the top weren't masterminding anything at all, but acting as the go-between at arm's length, so that the U.S. government involvement in projecting terrorism around the world for purposes of political change, as a change mechanism, as a change doctrine in the world, have used third-party surrogates. And that's why, for example, in the Oklahoma City bombing thing, we have the FBI actually protecting the identity of John Doe's 2 and 3, not allowing them, even though they knew their names, had them in custody, released them, refused to let them go before the grand jury, refused to let them be testified, and even put pressure, of course, on the grand jury to remove people such as Legislator Key and what was the other one, Hoppy Heidelberg,
was it?
That's right. Had them removed from the grand jury because they insisted on continuing to interview or wanting to interview John Doe's 2 or 3 and pursue those leads. So the bit larger question is not so much why was there a Middle Eastern connection to both Terry Nichols and McVeigh, but why was the FBI and the federal government protecting those third-party Middle Eastern sources?
And of course, it's very interesting that the governor of Oklahoma at the time was a man named Frank Keating, who had, of course, come from Washington, where he worked for the FBI, to become the governor of Oklahoma. Is that just a coincidence at that time in history?
Well, you know, Oklahoma must not have been totally bought and sold by the powers that be, because they moved the McVeigh trial, of course, to Denver, which is a bought and sold community. It's the center of illegal and dark side activities of government. They control everything from the real estate empires there to the government, the judiciary, a tremendous amount of corruption going on. There's no more highly focused than in the scandals involving the Denver airport and all those huge overruns and the millionaires that were made by special insider dealing. These people really do take care of their own. And when they get exposed, they miraculously show up making six figures at some other company, supposedly unrelated, but if you look deep, you find out that they have relationships, all going back to the federal government, and which acts as a coordinator of all of the industrial governmental relationships. These promises that if you play ball with us, you prosper. And believe me, they do. This latest contract to Boeing to lease so many of these cargo aircraft, it's been analyzed by some of the budget people that they could have purchased the aircraft and come out ahead, considering their lease agreements they signed with Boeing. This was simply a giveaway of U.S. taxpayer dollars to Boeing, which is a preferred corporation because they cooperate in the relationships that the U.S. wants with Russia. Boeing is dealing with Russia and China, giving away technology and doing so at the behest of the U.S. government. And they get rewarded for doing this.
It really is amazing, you know. And were those cargo planes, or were those actually tanker planes?
Both. There were tankers and cargo planes.
And right, they could have saved billions of dollars just by buying the planes. Oh no, we couldn't buy those planes. We're just going to lease them from and service them from Boeing. And you wonder how dumb they think the American people are. And I guess the average American is just so wound up in everything else, in the football season, and all those important things coming on, that they really can't stop and analyze what they're reading in the newspaper, because every once in a while they actually print something in there that is absolutely honest and straightforward.
Well, we have a leadership dependency culture in the United States ever since the founding of the nation, when you had some outstanding leaders that were worthy of your absolute trust. Americans have had this trust in leadership for years implanted upon them, and they're very willingly able to do that. Put their trust. We're not just talking about political leaders. We're talking about media leaders. We're talking about leaders in sports. We're talking about leaders in education. Credentials abound, and anyone who has powerful credentials is looked upon with absolute authority, so that people rarely question their ability to think for themselves. And of course, public education has and creates these kinds of hierarchical classifications, which tends to make people think, you know, you simply have to listen to the credentialed experts. All this creates a culture in which people don't feel confident and don't have any desire to challenge the existing leadership. And I think that's why, as long as the control system involves such a broad spectrum across the role of hierarchy in this country, there's no way to beat this at this time, unless there's a major mistake that they make, which they cannot cover up. Now, I know that didn't sound very encouraging, Stan. In other news, you know, Ashcroft has been on this propaganda blitz pushing for the U.S. Patriot Act and actually promoting follow-on legislation as well. I've received news from several sources that where an ash crop did these presentations before a favorable audience, particularly in front of fire and police, almost in front of dozens of American flags. It wasn't enough to have one American flag on the podium. They've got dozens in the line there. But finding out that a lot of these officers were put under high pressure to make this a mandatory attendance when the Attorney General came. So there was some arm twisting there to get some of these law enforcement people to attend this meeting.
I understand that the new legislation they're pushing is called the victory legislation. We got the patriot legislation that is unpatriotic, and the victory, which of course will, basically is massive expansion of government control of our lives as we move from freedom to fascism.
Well, what's interesting is that this is proclaimed to be simply a Drug Enforcement Enhancement Act, and yet the very terminology they use is enhancement of terrorism. And they're now, in this legislation, simply written everything as if it pertains to drugs and then said, but we're calling this narco-terrorism. In other words, it's a form of terrorism. So by inverse logic, they can apply any of the provisions of the Victory Act to patriot-type prosecutions as long as it can be included in the aegis of terrorism. But drugs, of course, has always been the prime way in which they can get any type of legislation through. Terrorism has replaced that now. But I find that interesting that with the resistance to Patriot 2, they've gone back to the cover of drugs.
Well, I think it's really so interesting. And really what is encouraging to me is that so many Americans are concerned about Patriot 1. So many communities have said, we're not going to abide by this. We're just not going to go along with it. And, of course, we got the ACLU playing their part, opposing it. But, of course, an awful lot of good people are opposing it, despite the fact the ACLU opposes it. So I think that some ways the American people are a lot smarter than they give them credit for.
Well, certainly Ashcroft wouldn't be out on the trail beating the bushes in support of this, and he wouldn't be having his lackeys like Senator Orrin Hatch running around writing editorials about how anyone who criticizes the Patriot Act is simply a radical and uninformed and extremist.
The believes in black helicopters, don't forget that.
Yes, yes. they wouldn't be doing this if, in fact, there wasn't a growing groundswell in opposition to this. They really would normally prefer simply to laugh it off and pretend that it's going to go away, but it's not going away, it's growing.
I think there really, with alternative radio, with certainly the internet, and more people getting on there, and a lot of younger people, they may be leftists, they may be indoctrinated, all sorts of crazy ideas, but they know something's wrong, and they have sort of a schizophrenia. They believe in socialism, but they have a distrust of government. And, I think that this is going to create real problems for the other side. That's why I really think they're going to have to stage another terrorist attack to get the American people cowed and willing to go along with this further imposition of totalitarian control over their lives in the name of maintaining freedom.
Well, I think you're right. It's interesting that in their manipulation of elections and law, of course, the Patriot Act is all about manipulating law so that you don't have any essential constitutional fallback positions of fundamental rights. But they're even directly manipulating the elections. You look at their working with Arnold Schwarzenegger in California, and he surrounds himself with George Shultz and Warren Buffett. And, George Shultz is the one who admitted that he was the one who met with George Bush and finally told the establishment powers that he's ready to be president. Now, of course, we all know, those of us who knew George Bush or had I had several subscribers who worked in the same office building when he was a nobody, and he was slovenly, a womanizer, obviously never talked about foreign affairs or anything governmental, just up into a few short years before he became governor. He was carefully tutored all along the way, and especially as governor, and then we know now from this frontline presentation on PBS that we had, as you pointed out, not only Henry Kissinger, but Strobe Talbott, Zbigniew Brzezinski, George Shultz, and Brent Scowcroft, and about a dozen other people briefing him for two solid weeks after he was thrown into the ring as the preferred candidate for the Republicans for president. And that's what prompted George Shultz to say that he had done the final interview to see that George Bush was ready to run for president. I mean, this is kingmakership in the process, and we have these same people now. We're hearing Arnold Schwarzenegger. Weak as the candidate as he is, I think these people are emboldened by their ability to put someone as stupid as George Bush and make him president. They might even be able to do the same with Arnold Schwarzenegger, who really doesn't have he's a nice enough guy, but certainly has a very checkered past. Isn't an ideological person at all. And I'm worried about the fact that the person who carries water for the Bush administration on almost every issue, Orrin Hatch, introducing a constitutional amendment to allow foreign-born politicians to run for president.
Gee, I wonder who he was thinking of.
Well, certainly the only one out there right now is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But, people have forgotten that George Shultz was behind Matt Fong when he ran for Senate, and he was simply a candidate of the establishment to run against, I think it was Barbara Boxer, and he even made Barbara Boxer look good. I hate to say that, but he was so radical on some of the issues. And then, of course, George Shultz was on the State of the World Forum with Gorbachev, when that was first established there. And then, of course, he had been the Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan. He certainly was behind George Bush. And anybody who thinks, Schwarzenegger is really running on his own, I really believe they're running Schwarzenegger so that a real conservative, wouldn't have a chance at all in this election.
I think that's precisely the reason why they're running Schwarzenegger. They even ran a major disinformation piece that I heard on public radio talking about the fact that Schwarzenegger really hadn't made up his mind until he got on the Jay Leno show and he decided to tell him that he was going to run for government as a kick. Why, in an article that was written about him in Salon magazine, references to quotes clear back in his weightlifting days, he told his buddies he was going to be governor of California. So this hardly is a person who never thought twice about it before he got on the Jay Leno show.
No,
but that's the kind of propaganda they put out, as if this is a spontaneous lark that he's on. It's a very carefully crafted candidacy.
And, of course, all they have to do is split the conservative vote. They have one Democrat, Bustamante, and three or four Republicans running, and we can be assured that nothing will change after the recall election. Well, let's go to Nathan, who's calling here. Hi, Nathan. You have a question or comment?
Hi, gentlemen. Good evening. Now, something said earlier jumped out at me. Do you or your guest doctor think that it is possible that the law prohibiting non-American, non-native born American citizens from being elected to the presidency may in fact be changed through some sort of means as part of this movement towards consolidation and global governance?
All right. Do you have any thoughts on that, Joel?
I don't think there's any consensus at all to change the law, frankly. That's what's so suspicious about Hatch even bringing it up. Hatch is bombarded as chairman of the Judiciary Committee with hundreds of bills that are pressing for legal change, and it tells you a great deal when he comes up and throws out this piece. There's no consensus for. He throws out the piece of legislation about the alien tuition and for in-state tuition and to give matricular things and give them driver's license. I mean, there's no constituency for that out there.
No way.
obviously there's a globalist agenda, although I don't think particularly that Hatch has bought into that. What he is an absolute yes man to the Bush administration, because they promised him that he can have a Supreme Court nomination if he'll play ball with them. And I think that's what drives Orrin Hatch.
Well, my question is, I missed this. I haven't seen the news all day. Did he actually say Arnold should run for president?
No, that hasn't been said, but the inference is, why would at this time in history they present a constitutional amendment, which would be very difficult to get through, that somebody foreign-born, how many foreign-born people do you know who've come into the political arena here in the last few months?
Well, it's scary. I mean, if we change that, we've removed a fundamental barrier. Yeah, I know it's unfair and all the rest of it, but it's a protection for our sovereignty,
okay,
the way I see it.
Good point. Thanks so much, Nathan. Let's go to Tony calling from Soquel. Hi, Tony. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, since you brought up the governor's race, I had to chime in something here. In the Chronicle the other day on page 42 of the sports section, there was a little clip that mentioned how Tom McClintock will not be able to be allowed to have his statement placed in the ballot with all of the other 138 people or whoever are running for the governor's office.
Why would that be?
There was something to do with a technical error that they didn't check the correct box of some sort about that they were not going to spend $10 million. And when it was brought up that contested it to the Supreme Court in the state of California, and they threw it out even though that it was allocated to be the error of the Secretary of State and not his, but they will not be allowed to have their statement placed in the ballot.
All right, well...
I was just wondering if possibly that maybe there was some sort of collusion here, as you said, to keep a real conservative from being elected to the state governorship.
I think you've just got you've got a suspicious mind, Tony.
Yeah,
you probably believe in black helicopters.
Actually, I did see a few of them one time, but my congressman told me that they didn't exist, but if I did take retaliatory action against them, even though they don't exist, that would be the commission of a federal crime. And I do believe I gave you that letter, so I'm
right,
making
I've
it
got
up.
That letter. Thanks so much, Tony. I've got to go to George in Pacific Grove. God bless. Hi, George. We're just about out of time. Do you have a question or comment?
Troy down here.
Troy. Okay, Troy.
My question on is about the presidential change in requirements. Being a native one.
Right.
Does anyone know where Rudolph Giuliani, because I consider him the next Republican candidate for president. Do you know where he was born?
I don't know. You, Joe?
I'm pretty sure he was American born.
The thing is,
he's of Italian stock, and I agree with him completely. I think they're setting up Giuliani as the prime Republican replacement for George Bush.
And I think what they do is they give us a choice of three or four, and we can pick any one of their candidates.
Well, I was thinking that I don't have the information anymore, but that he came like at age one or two with his parents. He's been here all his life.
Right. I can't really tell you one way or the
other. I'm going to research that because that is very interesting. I'm convinced that he is really their man, and if that's true, if he was foreign born, that would be the rationale for changing it because I'm convinced.
Yes, and they'll just let all this hype about Arnold being the guy, let it just get out of overblown.
Well, I think that's a great point. Hey, thanks so much, and we'll look forward to seeing what you can find, Joel. We're out of time, and thanks for calling, George, and thank you for being so much with us, Joel. Again, the website is joelskousen.com. That's joelskousen.com. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners tonight?
Well, even though I'm discouraged about the ultimate possibilities, the Lord does control these affairs, and just as in Israel, we find no matter how much they want to ram this phony priest process down their throat, somebody keeps throwing a monkey wrench into it. We need a monkey wrench here in America to stop this juggernaut they're on, and pray to God that we'll get one.
Well, I always like to say that between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. I agree with you. The more I see with these people, these elitists, these fabulously wealthy people, the less smart they appear to be. I don't see how men like this really can have the power that they have when they are as stupid as they really are. I mean, they make so many flagrant mistakes, and if we had a free and open press, why, the American people would realize what's going on. Anyway, God bless you, Joel. We'll look forward to getting on again real soon, because I always look forward to the World Affairs Brief.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Good night. Bye-bye. Well, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, and because the American people don't have another spiritual awakening. I think the outlook for the continuation of this great and wonderful country is very limited. And lastly, we ask you, of course, to remember my ministry, Radio Liberty. I pray for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you, of course, to hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line from the Sacramento area, Randy Thomason, with the Campaign for California Families, and he's going to bring us abreast of what's going up there, what's happening up in the Den of Vipers in Sacramento. Randy, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you. Well, we have to shine the light on those snakes so they run.
Right.
Well, as always, we talk about the legislation that affects you, and also the election here in California. We're really just a little over a month away from a big election. And let me first talk about legislation. Dr. Stan, there was a great victory 3 months ago on the floor of the California State Assembly. A bad bill that would have pushed sex surveys, sex questions upon children in government schools without parental permission was defeated. Republicans actually got up and blasted the bill, and Democrats scurried under the shadows and put the bill on hold, on ice, if you will. Well, that was a victory. Now there's another bill that's very similar. It's authored by Sheila James Kuehl, who's a lesbian activist, and it's called SB 71. And SB 71 would not only do away with abstinence education, which, you know, children should wait. They shouldn't get involved with all this sex stuff, because the only safe sex is within a committed marriage between a husband and wife. Everything else is truly a fraud, and there are not only sexually transmitted diseases, but a lot of broken hearts and hurt feelings that go along with playing with the fire of sex before time, and the time is waiting till marriage. But this bill, SB 71, would actually allow schools to bring in outside speakers to ask all sorts of sex questions of children, school children. We're talking junior high and high schoolers, and do it without written parental permission. Now, Dr. Stan, I know that is absolutely wrong, because the children belong to their parents. I mean, whose child is it anyway? The parents or the state? And to run mom and dad out of the picture by saying, oh, we want to sneak these questions on your kids and ask about their sexual practices, their sexual beliefs, that is wrong.
Well, of course, I'm just hoping that maybe some of these dense Christians out there will, of course, be willing to take their kids out of the government schools if they realize, of course, that the people there in the state legislature really want to use the educational program to destroy their souls and destroy their morality and destroy their embarrassment and, of course, really change their attitude towards God, family, and country.
Yeah, you see surveys out there which show that the more degrees, the more educational degrees you have, the less you'll vote pro-family or in favor of morality. And I always look at my wife and I go, well, they've been in the schools so long, they've been taught over and over that God is dead and man came from monkeys. But actually the evidence, if they'd really get an education outside of the universities, show otherwise. More and more evolutionists are coming to realize that there's a supreme being, an entity that designed this universe, and they have not found these missing links over the years. And they found that the cells, Dr. Stan, you're a doctor, the cells are so unique. They're so unique that they're so complex. You can't say that they just started from nothing. And so it's very interesting in this way what what education will do to de-educate you from truth.
Well, of course, I always say that, you know, most people have a basic sense of right and wrong, and even a realization of the presence of a God. In fact, one of my people we've had on here has a book called Eternity in Their Heart, saying that you go into all the native areas, you know, primitive areas, and there the natives know there's a God. They may not know his name, but they know there's a God. But you take American kids and you send them to junior high school and high school and then into college, and you have them read Kant and Marx and Engel and Hegel, and you know, and after a while, of course, you destroy this very sense, this innate sense of the realization of a supreme being. But it takes an awful lot of education before you can accept something that is totally false and come to believe it's true.
Yeah, and so here you're educating right here on the radio. You're providing evidence, and I provide the evidence that when a parent is legally responsible for their children, legally, and these children are biologically their own to raise character-wise, physically, mentally raise them. This is family. When a school cannot send a child on a field trip without written parental permission, doesn't it make only sense that before the school asks children questions like, do you masturbate, which is a real survey out there, for kids, could you be gay? That's another survey. How do you like to do sex? Could you, as a boy, be a girl, or could you, as a girl, really be male? These types of suggestive questions, which really are hurtful to the developing psyches of children, these should not be asked at all.
You don't have to convince me, Randy. And what can we do to help you block that legislation?
Well, Dr. Stan, there's a chance. I want to ask the listeners, you listening right now, to get on the phone if you're in California, and tonight and tomorrow morning, call your state assembly member and urge him or her to oppose SB 71. Say this is pushing sex surveys on school children behind their parental or parents' backs, no written parental permission required, especially if you're on the Monterey County area. Call Simone Salinas, 916-319-2028, 916-319-2028, and urge him to oppose SB 71.
Okay, fine. And anything else you want to bring up? You want to tell us what's happening as far as the gubernatorial race?
Yes, briefly. There are three main candidates to replace Gray Davis. I think there's an absolutely good chance that Gray Davis will be recalled. He's scrambling for support, and it just really isn't there. Bustamante, Schwarzenegger, or McClintock, you choose. But the next governor can be elected with 30% of the turnout of the vote. That means McClintock actually has a chance because he has incredible grassroots support, which Arnold's TV appearances and the millions that the special interests give Bustamante cannot really reflect. And so there has been the marriage protection pledge sent to every candidate so far among the majors. McClintock is the only one who can be trusted to protect the vote of the people on marriage, and actually is the best fiscally as well. So you can choose who you want to vote for, but I'm there to report that to you. There'll be a debate tomorrow in the Bay Area, and then there'll be another debate on September 17th, which Arnold Schwarzenegger will participate in. But I'm telling you, there's a big difference between McClintock and the others on a lot of issues, both moral and fiscal.
Well, now, of course, they're going to let McClintock in the debates. I mean, how are they going to get 135 people running, don't they?
Well, you have to have, for this debate tomorrow, tomorrow afternoon and evening, you have to have at least 10% in most polls. Now, McClintock did have 12% in the Los Angeles Times poll, and Bill Simon had 6%. If you believe most of the Simon supporters will go toward McClintock, McClintock would have 18% compared to Schwarzenegger's 22%. a statistical tie. Of course, that's of registered voters. The likely voters and those who turn out are really those who are passionate conservatives or passionate liberals. And Bustamante is not exciting many people, and Davis is not exciting many people. I think there are a lot more passionate conservatives out there than passionate liberals on this.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how many people will vote for Tom, how many will vote for certainly Schwarzenegger, simply because of his name recognition, how many will vote for Bustamante, and, of course, he'll play the race card. You can be sure of that. He's been a member of MECHA, and, of course, that is the group that wants to take California and turn it back to Mexico. And he's never denied his membership in MECHA. We've talked to people who knew him. He was certainly a racist Mexican. I mean, there's wonderful Mexicans, and then they're racist, and he fits in that category. At least this is what I've heard from people who know him.
Yeah, I'll tell you. People of faith should vote for morality. There's really no question about that.
Well, I think we've got a lot of good Hispanic people out there, you know, who really feel very similar to the way we do on most moral issues. And,
yes.
You know, once they've been here, they learn the language, they become good Americans, and we just need an awful lot more of them.
Yeah. Marriage, family, religious freedom, parental rights, and protecting the family pocketbook. We don't need higher taxes in California. We need lower taxes, and I don't have much support at all for Bustamante's idea of let's tax ourselves into solutions. No, that's the problem. That's part of the problem. And so we'll be updating you, and thank you so much. Visit our website, savecalifornia.com. Sign up for email updates. Dr. Stan, appreciate you much.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Randy Thomason, and we'll be very shortly getting on the line here at Radio Liberty, Brad Dacus. Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute, who's on the front lines, of course, the legal battle. Christianity is under attack all across America. And, of course, Brad has a public interest law firm that offers pro bono services for people who are being persecuted because of their religious convictions. So I think that you'll find our interview with Brad. Hopefully we'll be able to get him on here in just a minute. If not, why, we'll go to our friend John Spring. But Brad, of course, had given up the opportunity to go out and do a good law practice, and instead, of course, has established this group, and has got a lot of good lawyers, and there are good lawyers out there, who give free time to help defend people who fit into this category of religious persecution in cities. Of course, many of them, the people who control the cities, governments, are anti-Christian. You have to really understand this is really what this is all about. There's a spiritual battle of people who hate Christianity, and so they'll use their positions in government to make the lives of Christian churches or Christian people miserable, and Brad's there to defend them. And with that as a background, Brad Dacus, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Tell us what's going on, Brad.
Well, I tell you, Dr. Stanley, it's real serious what's taking place. There's a bill, AB 458, that's pending before the it's on the governor's desk now. We announced it as soon as we heard last week. And this bill is outrageous. What it would basically do is require that foster parents who have foster children now in California give a special affirmation to these children who perceive themselves as being homosexual or transvestite or transsexual, and affirm it instead of getting counseling for the kid or encouraging some positive instruction in some way. They're actually supposed to be a participant, getting encouraged these kids along. And then, in order to even be a foster parent in California, they're going to require all of them to have special sensitivity training in with pro-homosexual, transsexual lifestyles. So they're trying to basically indoctrinate the foster parents also into this. And what this means is that we're going to see according to State Senator Rico Haller, a potential flight of many God-fearing Christian, people of faith no longer wanting to be foster parents in the state of California, leaving a lot of kids out in the dark and or with parents that really aren't committed with a true heart to want to help these kids.
Have you ever been to a sex sensitivity training program?
No, I haven't.
Well, I'll tell you what, they insisted the doctors all go to these programs. And so, you know, they put them on at the hospital where I was practicing, and they have not one screen, but about four screens. So you have, you know, you're seeing all of these figures all at one time. And I sat there for about 10 minutes, and of course this was, maybe a dozen years ago. And I finally got up and walked out. I just wasn't going to put up with it. But it was, the whole purpose was to decondition you. They're using mind games, you know, to decondition you to, so that there's nothing now will ever shock you again. And that's really what they do. They play mind games. And if I was a foster parent, I would just say, you find somebody else to take care of the children, because I'm not going to play your games. And not until the American people who are willing to go along with it, to Christian parents get their kids out of the government schools, until we withdraw from this corrupt system, are we going to be able to do anything. Is the legislation going to go through? I assume the governor will sign it because of his homosexual and transvestite constituency.
Right. Well, in the past, he has pledged to veto this legislation in the prior years. However, insiders have it that he's going to go ahead and reverse himself once again, as he's had so recently, and actually support it. And if he does, it's going to be a real slap against, you know, basically the attempt to put Christians in the back of the bus when it comes to foster care and being an active part of the solution. And that's just, in fact, I'll tell you one thing. We at the Pacific Dust Institute have made a public pledge to represent any foster parent that is outright discriminated against or prevented from being a foster parent because of their Christian beliefs and values about homosexuality or whatever it might be on that end. So if it's actually implemented, it becomes law, and it is implemented in that regard, we're going to be there to represent people. So.
You know, one of my producer was just saying, and I tend to agree with him, I wonder how God feels about what's going on. You know, we look at this thing from a purely temporal point of view. You know, the governor may sign, he may not sign. The legislature is enacted, but, you know, God will not be mocked. And,
right.
You know, I really fear for my country when I reflect that, as Jefferson said, God is just, and
right.
His justice will not sleep forever.
And right. God loves those kids very much, every single one of them.
Amen to that. Well, thank you so very much, Brad. You want to get out your website and your telephone number or anything?
Oh, you bet. Our website, where people can sign up to get our press releases and case updates for it without charge, is pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org. And our toll-free number is 888-305-9129, 888-305-9129.
Okay, well, thank you so very much for everything you do, Brad. God
thank
bless
you.
Thank
you. Likewise. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. And, you know, we've got a lot of great people out there on our side we're working with. And, of course, you'll get a chance to meet a lot of them right here at Radio Liberty. And I hope you enjoyed the interview with Brad. And, of course, let me just go ahead. And we're going to get, of course, John Spring on now. John is a geographer. And John has his own radio program in Southern California. And, of course, is reaching out down there trying to get people to understand what's going on and, of course, to become concerned. And you know, we have a lot of good people, but they don't know where to turn because we really don't have any leadership. One of my supporters had written to me today and said, where are the Patrick Henrys? Well, unfortunately, there aren't any Patrick Henrys today. The men who will get up there and stand for righteousness and of course, will not compromise. And, of course, if you've ever read that wonderful, wonderful speech of Patrick Henry's, where he talks about the war is already upon us, you know, we'll soon hear the sounds of conflict, you know, they're already forging our chains. Is life so dear or peace so sweet that it would be sacrificed for chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God, for I know not what course others may take. But as for me, give me liberty or give me death. And I wonder how many Americans were really willing to die for their liberty today. And, you know, it's been said if you're not willing to die for something, you really don't have very much to live for. And with that as a background, let's go to John Spring. John, how are you doing?
Real fine, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to be on your program again.
Well, tell us what some of the things are. Now, you've been in contact with some people. Are they over in Afghanistan, or are they just experts on the Afghanistan picture?
Well, both, actually. But before I get into Afghanistan, and I did have a meeting with one of my Afghan-American friends just last week, I would like to remind our listening audience that it was the beginning of this week that commemorated the 20th anniversary of KAL Flight 007. And one thing that is rather unique about the more recent findings, according to Bert Schlossberg, whom I had a conversation with just last night. He's now going to be returning to Israel, but I don't think most Americans are aware that there's a good possibility that even at this late date, that Larry McDonald and all passengers of the aircraft could actually be alive today within the former Soviet Union, because it is believed that that aircraft was not blown up in midair, as we had thought for quite some time, but rather was just marginally damaged and was able to make either a ditch landing into relatively shallow water to one of the nearby islands, or actually landed at an air base within the Soviet Union.
Well, of course, we've heard these stories, and actually, for our listeners out there, we actually have the book that Schlossberg had written. We have a four-tape set on that. We actually have the suppressed government reports. We have all of a special where you can get the suppressed report from the Senate Investigating Committee, another report, the book, and I think a four-tape set that's called the KAL. 007 special even, but if you want to get the information, it's all available from Radio Liberty. Information on that makes me believe, of course, that Larry McDonald and the others did survive, but the question is, why did the Reagan administration not want the truth to come out? And I will tell you why I believe that was true. And of course, it is simply because Larry McDonald had established a foundation, one of the things he'd done, established a foundation that was bringing out the fact that the United States had financed the Soviet Union since its inception. In other words, we'd financed the best enemy that money could buy, because communism doesn't work. It's not efficient. They had a command-control system. And so without constant infusions of money and technology and foreign aid from the United States, communism would have collapsed. And certainly this was true during the Reagan administration when we were picking up our funding of that. But we can't let the American people know that any more than we can let the American people know that our good friends, the Saudis, and the Pakistanis funded al-Qaeda both before and after the 9/11 attack. And of course, there is a great deal of evidence, and if anybody wants that evidence, it's available in my video, 9/11 Contrived, or certainly in information that's in my newsletters, that the CIA was actually working with al-Qaeda from the time it was created. And that's covered in a book written in 1999 called Dollars for Terror. Everybody in Europe knows that. Most people in Europe believe we kept Saddam Hussein in power. And, of course, every time the military tried to overthrow him, why, of course, we exposed the plots to Saddam Hussein so we could arrest and torture and then kill the military people. And that's covered in a book called See No Evil, written by Robert Baer, who was a senior CIA agent in Afghanistan in 1995. Pardon me, CIA agent in Kurdistan in 1995. But the similarity between our support and the continued Saudi and Pakistani support for the al-Qaeda terrorists, and of course our support for the Russians creating the best enemy money could buy, you know, is really rather striking, and I share your concern. Yes. I suspect that Larry McDonald was abandoned by the people who control both of our political parties, because the last thing they wanted is for the American people to understand that we had created, we had financed, we had maintained, and we controlled international communism.
Yes. By the way, when I was browsing in a bookstore, I thought I came across a more recent book written by Robert Baer. I didn't have time to...
It's called Sleeping with the Devil, and it's a new book in which we're in the process of reading at the present time, along with 15 other books. But yes, Sleeping with the Devil, of course, is how we have been backing the Saudis and covering up the fact that they actually financed Osama bin Laden. They provided 15 of the 19 terrorists. They financed al-Qaeda not only before 9/11, but they're still doing it at the present time.
Yes. By the way, I would like to also say to the listening audience, any of the books that Dr. Stan carries, I would concur with and substantiate as being very legitimate books. I'm sad to say that the brief time that I spent last week in a bookstore in the current events section led me to believe that there is so much disinformation now being published in book form. which can confuse the American reader immensely. I don't know if you've come across this at all, Dr. Stan, but there is so much disinformation from a historical standpoint or from a realistic standpoint that is just put into print, and it seems so credible to the naive reader nowadays.
Call it information overload. There's so much information there, you don't know what to do with it all, and you can't correlate it all, and so you eventually just throw up your hands and go off and watch television.
But you have taken the time to study and review these books, and you can save listeners a lot of time and heartaches in reading through books that would otherwise be misleading. I think that's a key factor that everyone should remember when you discuss your books. Every one of your books, as far as I've been able to determine, are very solid. I've had an opportunity to review many of the books that you've alluded to, and they're A1 books.
Well, I appreciate the words of encouragement. Anybody would like to find our books, you can go up on the website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and certainly books, the videos, four-tape sets. But we have information you're not going to get elsewhere. And then, of course, almost everything we talk about, we do have documentation on. A few things we don't have, a thing that I just remember from the past. But we try to actually keep these articles on file so that you can actually hold them in your hands. And whether the articles by Jacques Cousteau talks the necessity of killing about 350,000 people a day. I think the term was eliminate. That's a nicer word than killing. Eliminate 350,000 people a day.
Well, that's frightful, Dr. Right. Stan. And I know years ago, being a scuba diver myself, I thought it would be a wonderful idea to join the Cousteau Society. Mm-hmm. And he seemed like such a nice environmentalist who was concerned about...
The dolphins, right.
Yes. And in reality, he was an advocate of mass executions, or extermination, perhaps a better word. Getting back to my meeting last week, I spent practically an entire day with my Afghan friend, who's now in his late 70s, and he is to the point that he is very frustrated because he would like so much... because he is now an American citizen, to, from a patriotic standpoint, to provide significant information to the United States government, but for some reason it seems as if he has the wrong credentials for the current U.S. State Department or other government agencies. In other words, it seems as if he's turned down or his letters are ignored, and he would be probably one of the most valuable assets to providing contacts within Afghanistan and within the intelligence community overseas. Here's just one example of where you have so many CFR people in the State Department that basically will do everything they can to prevent him from ever reaching any officials or be in a position to give any advice. Later on in our conversations, he mentioned that for a brief period of time, he was assigned to the UN as the Afghan envoy to the United Nations, and it was very interesting what he said at the time. This goes back several decades, of course, but he said, unlike the United States, the Soviet Union and some of the other Soviet bloc nations would send out invitations to all envoys or diplomats or ambassadors from third world nations such as his, invite them to, buffets and receptions and very high-priced dinners, which only the elite could normally afford. And he graciously turned down all of these. But by contrast, the United States did not even offer him a ham sandwich, which suggests that... if indeed we were supposedly trying to use the United Nations to our advantage, we certainly failed miserably in attempting to establish friends from non-committed nations of the third world.
I don't think we're really interested in friends. I think we're interested in control, and I think that's what the name of the game is. You know, it doesn't matter whether people like you or not. If you've got the military power, you've got the wealth, you can run things pretty well. That's the great tragedy, is they're using America's wealth and our military power to create the New World Order, the New World Religion. We'll be right back here with our good friend, John Springs. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, go ahead, John. You were telling us about your friend. You know, and of course, his attitude, you know, he's a representative of the United Nations, representing Afghanistan. And of course, the United States is not doing anything they can to, of course, ingratiate themselves with the leaders of the countries. However, they're probably providing a lot of money for some of the countries and then buying their support that way. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, that is probably a fair statement, but the problem that we fail to understand is that when you are dealing with various cultures of the world, such as a very warm, oriented culture of Afghanistan, people are looking for friendship. They're human beings, and they like to interact with other human beings. And by contrast, the Americans are very cold. They will provide you with so many dollars for a certain project. But to actually sit down and talk with you, is it any wonder that we have lost so many votes in the UN on so many key issues? I think we have basically lost by default, and I think, again, that's part of the CFR deliberate attempts to bring down the United States. Now, if I may change our topics just slightly, I don't know if you had Charlotte Iserbeet on or Iserbeet on earlier today.
Yes, I did. We talked to Charlotte today.
But I had some interesting conversations with her and 2 days ago, also with Bernadine Smith of the Second Amendment Committee. And I am providing to my listening audience, in fact, I welcome, and I will provide the same offer to any members of your listening audience, a free copy of document 7277. This was a publication that was printed by the U.S. Department of State in September of 1961. And if they wish to write to me, John W. Spring, Post Office Box 18946, Anaheim, California, 92817. I will send them a free copy of publication number 7277. And what is so important about this particular publication, Dr. Stan, is that it explains in layman's language basically the disarmament policy that was approved by the United States Congress, both House and Senate, in September of 1961 and signed by President John F. Kennedy.
Now, was it approved by Congress? It may very well have been. I remember it was a State Department document, 7277.
Well, that is correct. 7277 is a State Department document which explains, in essence, what public law was passed by Congress. And the thing that is rather shocking about this document, it was divided up into three stages, and there was a similar bill that was passed by both houses of Congress back in 1989 during the first Bush administration.
And basically, it's a plan for a complete and total disarmament of the entire world.
Yes, but
the only people who will have any weapons are the goons from the United Nations who will represent the ruling elite who will control this new world government.
Or so we're led to believe. But in reality, from my perspective, I look upon it as a complete fraud, because the only people that are being convinced that this disarmament is supposedly taking place are the American people, and they will become the victims and perish if they go through with this. And from the American perspective, it appears that we are now entering stage three of this disarmament policy. And during stage three is the time when, very shortly from now, if all goes as scheduled, we should be disbanding all of our major armed forces, and the Homeland Security Department will be taking on the role of basically enforcing the laws of for the civilian population, and their military arm will be the U.S. Coast Guard, which will act as more or less the state police to assure that all of us fall into line, basically. And of course,
They will also really want to more or less militarize our local police, and
yes.
And then be able to use the army as police, and they want to do away with the posse comitatus, and they want the ability to have a fascist society in the name of preserving our freedom, protecting us from the wicked terrorists. And this whole thing was planned long before 9/11. That's the incredible thing. And you can go back and you can read a Phase 3 report from the National Commission on Security in the 21st Century, put out by a CFR front group called the National Commission for Security in the 21st Century, headed by Gary Hart and Warren Rudman. We have copies of that available through Radio Liberty. It's a rather large document, and of course, you can perhaps pull it down on the website, but if not, you can always get it through Radio Liberty, and there must be 100 or more pages. But everything that has happened since 9/11 was planned before 9/11, and why would they have done that? And if they were already making plans for the Office of Homeland Security, if they knew there were going to be terrorist attacks, as Phase 1 report in 1999 from the same commission, CFR committee, 13 of the 14 people came from the CFR. If they knew that, and the Paul Brenner report that came out in the year 2000 said there was going to be a terrorist attack, and the report from the Project for the New American Century was talking about, of course, we won't be able to accomplish what we want unless there's a catastrophic and catalytic event like another Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
Why would the FBI think that the attack was going to be overseas when these reports had already said there's going to be terrorism, Americans are going to die on American soil, and the FBI said, gee, we had no idea there's going to be attacks. How could that have happened? We were 99.8% sure the attack was going to be overseas. And if you believe that, why, you probably, would want to buy part of my share in the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yes. I imagine there's going to be many investors in that landmark. But there's another book that's been produced by the Heritage Foundation. I consider it one of the best works of propaganda published in recent years. It was published in January of 2002. The title is Defending the American Homeland, a report of the Heritage Foundation Homeland Security Task Force, chaired by L. Paul Bremer III and Edward Meese III.
Ed Meese III?
Yes.
All right, now for those people who don't know, L. Paul Bremer III happens to be Henry Kissinger's man. He's current the czar over in Iraq, and of course Ed Meese is part of this whole problem we have. And the Heritage Foundation is really a Council on Foreign Relations front organization, no longer representing America, but those people with an internationalist dream.
And it's my understanding, although I personally have not been able to verify this, that there are former Soviet agents, even with the former KGB, working now as consultants, even with the Heritage Foundation.
I don't know about that. I do know that Charlotte Isabey had some fairly convincing evidence that they have hired some old KGB people to help with the Office of Homeland Security, because they understand how to establish such a structured organization.
Yes. Now, I was thinking today, Dr. Stan, historically speaking, there have been many nations which have had empires beyond their current boundaries. We could list several, beginning with Spain, Portugal, France, Belgium, Holland, Germany, Japan, Italy, and Russia, as well, of course, as the United States. And most of these nations, as of now, do not have too many territories beyond their current contiguous the national limits. But the United States is one of the few nations which, for some reason, under the auspices of the UN or the Pentagon, is sending its troops into vast different regions of the world at a time when we are spread too thin And I am very concerned because I think we are reaching the stage whereby many of our men and women overseas are going to be abandoned and forsaken. I think this is one means of disbanding our armed forces and in the process placing whatever members should survive under UN control, no longer loyal to the United States. This frightens me, Dr. Stan. As I said, we are entering what appears to be stage three of the Disarmament Act, and I don't see us in a position to do too much about it, except get the word out as quickly as possible, because when they say disarmament, we're not just talking about our armed forces, but we're talking, as you mentioned, about abolishing local control of the police and sheriff's departments and replacing them with federal marshals. And, of course, every citizen's right to own and bear arms will be no longer possible. So, and when that comes about, then all of our rights are going to be lost. So that's why I'm encouraging people to get this document, 7277. It's only about 19 pages in length. It's a small pamphlet, but it gives enough information for people to become aware as to how realistic this threat actually is and how timely it is.
Well, I think it's very real. I remember when that, I'm old enough to remember when that came out, John. I know it, 1961, I got started in this in 1962, and that was just coming out. So give your address again where people can get that from you.
Of course, if you'll just write to me, send a postcard to John W. Spring, Post Office Box 18946, Anaheim, California, 92817.
92817, okay.
Yes.
And I think that it's well worthwhile. If you don't have a copy of 7277 State Department document, get it. Understand that everything that's happening now, is, of course, is following a pattern, and you have to understand this is long-range planning, but it didn't start in 1961, didn't start when Franklin Delano Roosevelt became president. It already started back in the 1640s when the Rosicrucians came to the United States from England, and their assignment was to use America to create the new Atlantis, and one day America would lead not only the Western Hemisphere, but the whole world. Into this new world order, the new world religion, and we would restore lost Atlantis. That was what it was all about. And, of course, the Atlantean society, which I don't know whether it ever existed, but that was the dream of Francis Bacon, who sent the Rosicrucians here in 1640, had written a book called The New Atlantis. And, of course, if you've read the writings of Manly P. Hall, his secret teachings of all ages, and Manly P. Hall was a Satanist, but he writes extensively about Bacon and, of course, the fact that he was involved in this whole world conspiracy back in 1640 to bring about this world government, and how these people hid their symbols every place. They've always been here. They've been here since the beginning of time, because, of course, they date back to the Garden of Eden and
yes,
the world's second oldest religion. You must understand we're involved in a spiritual battle today. Can we defeat Satan and his enemies? Of course not. Our job is to get the information out. This is what John's doing. This is what we do. Our job is to be true and to disseminate the truth. Victory is the Lord's.
Now, there's one thing that we must emphasize. I hope you're in agreement with me on this. We must do everything we can to get out of the United Nations and get the United Nations out of the United States, basically. That is one factor that could make all the difference in the world. Secondly, as Charlotte Isserbeet and also Bernadine Smith are pointing out, they're attempting to do a memorial, which is a resolution with teeth in it, and they're hoping that eventually we can get three-quarters of the states of the United States to sign similar memorials signed by their governors after it's approved by the legislative bodies within their states, and the Attorney General, of course, and the Lieutenant Governor, depending on the bylaws and constitution of each state. But if we could get three-quarters of the states of the United States to approve a similar resolution which says we do not basically go along with this concept of disarmament, that those states combined would have more power than our federal government in Washington. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but...
Well, remember that Washington is incredibly weak. It really doesn't have the moral authority anymore since it's abandoned God. You know, the standard joke, you can help tell how a politician is lying because his lips are moving. The only way that they can impose their tyranny on us is for the American people to give up their freedom. If the American people understood what this is about, they understood the corruption that exists at every... corner of Washington, D.C., and we began to say, we're not going to send our money to Washington, D.C., we're going to keep it at the state and local level, and we want to be free, and you're violating the Constitution. What we need is for people to understand that most of what goes on in Washington, D.C. is unconstitutional. And, of course, even by the new definition of terrorism, those who would change our way of life by subversion. Why, that's the Council on Foreign Relations, that's the Project for the New American Century, that's the Bush administration, that's the Clinton administration, that's the leaders of both houses of Congress. They're changing our constitutional form of government because, of course, most of what they're doing is totally unconstitutional.
This is so true. Practically everything that's coming out of Washington is unconstitutional. It has been that way for quite a while, and unfortunately... so few of us have been informed of so many of these things. I must confess to my ignorance regarding document 7277. I did not examine this until about 3 weeks ago, and I was so shocked when I read it. I contacted a friend of mine, and he said, John, I agree this is very important. I will do what I can, and so I have an anonymous donor who is helping to provide me with this material to send out to my listeners and to your listeners, of course.
Well, I appreciate that, and I would recommend that people get the document and of course, you know, make it available to others. It's vitally important people understand that everything going on has been planned for many, many decades.
Yes.
We're coming to the climax in civilization, and you're either going to stand up and be counted or you'll simply be counted out.
Yes. Well, I don't know if it's the climax for the entire world, but it will definitely be the climax for the United States because we have been more or less led to believe this fraud that the whole entire world is disarming. The only nation that I know of that is making serious plans now to disarm is the United States of America.
In fact, the George Bush administration is unilaterally disarming, is destroying our intercontinental ballistic missiles, our Minuteman missiles, the MX missiles that we have. Why are we destroying them? Well, because the president looked into Putin's eyes and he could see he was a man of character, and Putin just doesn't have the money to destroy his missiles. He'd love to destroy his missiles. He'd love to destroy his chemical weapons and his biological weapons. It would just give him another $6 billion or $8 billion. Maybe he might do something. We've already given him $6 billion. They've done absolutely nothing. Do you think our leaders are really that stupid, unintentionally?
No,
there's this spiritual force behind this thing, and you go back and you read the book of Ezekiel, and you'll find out, of course, that there is going to be a great war coming in the Middle East, and isn't it interesting that at this time in history, America is permanently stationing troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, and there are going to be more and more troops over there. But eventually with this war, and you read about it, there's going to be, of course, an attack, not only on the countries there in the Middle East, but it attacks on the distant islands. What are they talking about? Where are these distant islands are going to be attacked? Get out your Ezekiel 38 and 39, and I think it's chapter 6 of 39. Don't quote me on that, but get it out and read it. And so between you know, all of what we're seeing being put together by the neoconservatives in Washington, D.C., and the Project for the New American Century and the Council on Foreign Relations, behind all this, the plans of men and demons, there's a higher hidden hands.
Yes, and that former KGB agent that President Bush seemingly trusts so much in Moscow.
Putin, right.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin. He has practically all of his ICBMs pointed now towards the United States with nuclear warheads. So at any given moment, if he decides that he's in the mood to annihilate the United States, he could take out that option, basically.
No, but remember, George Bush has left in place Bill Clinton's edict that we will not retaliate until, of course, all of our weapons have been destroyed. We will absorb a first attack. Now, why would George Bush maintain that stupid position that was taken by that irresponsible, that pro-communist Bill Clinton? Why would George Bush leave that in place? And, of course, after the first attack, we may not have anything to retaliate with.
Yes, but I don't know if the elitists in Washington are really that concerned, because I think they buy into the concept of sustainable development and depopulating the Earth, perhaps at a very drastic rate.
Right, like United States, because, of course, their loyalty is not to the United States, it's to this globalist dream. And believe me, a lot of them have their villas in other countries, and, you know, they're not going to, of course, leave their families here to be incinerated with the rest of it.
No. Or, I don't know if you've heard anything about this, but there are rumors circulating that for the elitists, I'm talking about families such as the Rockefellers and some of the high officials in our American government have been provided already with an underground community deep within the earth that would be immune to any nuclear attack.
In fact, they were building one for Dick Cheney. In fact, we found these articles in the Washington publications that the neighbors were all upset by all these explosions under Dick Cheney's home. But, of course, the government couldn't comment on them because, of course, they were top secret. Well, they're building, of course, enclaves for the Bushes and for the Cheneys and for the Rumsfelds and for the elitists. And we have them all over the country for the elite, but nothing, of course, for us common folks. In Russia, of course, they have shelters for the common folks. Every major building has underground shelters there, fully stocked. But, of course, they are preparing for the nuclear war that they believe is coming. But we say, that could never happen. God would never allow that to happen to America. And I would simply ask, why, if God is just, would he allow us to escape the punishment that is so due this nation that has been given so much and is turned against our Lord?
Yes, but you have to understand that the American people have been deceived in so many ways, Dr. Stan, through the news media, through Hollywood's entertainment industry, through almost every dimension. And
they've been also deceived by the church, and that is one of the most unforgivable things that's happened.
Absolutely, and our educational systems. There's not one institution that we should overlook in terms of blame. In my own case, I only wish that I had learned more information than I did when I started into this research more than 42 years ago.
Well, anyway, go ahead, because I'm certainly enjoying what you're saying, John.
My interest came about when Eisenhower was still president of the United States. It seemed as if we were not at all concerned about what was happening 90 miles off the shore of the southeastern part of the United States. But unfortunately, what has happened in the years since is that it appears that most of our policies throughout the world have basically not taken into consideration all factors. Many of the problems that were overlooked then are now major problems today, whether it's the Philippines, whether it's Cuba, whether it's the Congo, South Africa, Afghanistan. These were problems that should have been addressed in a responsible manner more than 40 years ago. In the case of China, 50 years ago. But unfortunately, we had people in this Department of State, we had people in the Truman administration who basically did not have the United States interests in mind, but rather those of the CFR, those of the Carnegie Endowment, of the Ford Foundation, of the Rockefeller Foundation, of the Rothschild groups. the Brotherhood of Darkness, and we just assumed that everything was going as it should be, and very few of us bothered to probe or to ask questions. And then we wonder why a patriot such as General MacArthur was treated and humiliated in the manner that he was by Dean Acheson and George Marshall and President Harry Truman. So there are so many things that are ongoing problems that were never addressed in appropriate manner years ago. Korea, for example, that we still have to face these problems today, and we probably will be reacting to many events due to the fact that we have not taken the time to do our homework, to study in great depth, and unfortunately, we have not sent many honorable people to Congress, either in the House or the Senate, and until we can get good men and women to actually represent us at our nation's capital, we must do whatever means we can peacefully to try to turn the tide, whether it's through these resolutions or at least informing the American people as to what is actually taking place now. And I realize it's very much like the proverbial frog in the pot of water that's being warmed up gradually. Well, we're just about to the boiling point, and we're not even aware that we're ready to be cooked alive.
All right, well, I agree with you totally, and I think that what Bernadine Smith and what Charlotte Isabey are doing is so important, and I recommend that people get informed, and if you want more information, give us a call at our 800 number. Or, John, are you putting out information on that through your ministry?
Well, again, through our mailing address, we're going to be sending out related material in addition to document 7277. So I encourage your listeners to write. Now, we do have a website which needs to be updated, but still there's so much wealth of background information. And our website, again, is World Strategy. That's one word, worldstrategy.netfirms. That's plural with an S at the end, .com.
All right, let me put out Charlotte Isbay's website. It's I think it's Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. Just type in Charlotte Isbay, I-S-E-R-B-Y-T, into your Google website, Bernadine Smith, into your Google, and pull up their material, and then go to their websites. They've got a lot of great material in there as well. John, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, what Bernadine Smith has done is very commendable. I hope that everyone does go to her website. Let me give that again. It's www.libertygunrights.com. Libertygunrights.com. There's an S at the end of rights.
All right. Libertygunrights.com. And Bernadine's done a lot of great material. And state by state, we need to begin getting this information out.
Yes, she's really a wonderful patriot, and Charlotte is a intellectual sweetheart. I'm very highly impressed with both of these ladies who have been devoting so much of their lives, as you have, Dr. Stan, to trying to make the American people aware of what needs to be dealt with in an appropriate manner.
Well, John, thank you for everything you do and for putting on that program down in Los Angeles, and let's hope that God will bless that and keep you on the air for a good long time. Anyway, we're out of time. Thanks so much for being with us. And this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and certainly if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. And, of course, pray for my ministry, for our provision and protection. So until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.